You should see an outline in your bulletin. It should say God at the altar at the top. From Genesis chapters 4 through chapter 22, God at the altar. Let's ask God to help us as we study His Word together. God, our Father, please speak to us in these moments as we look to Your Word. Reveal to us the significance of Jesus Christ and the sacrifice that He made. And all the access and all the benefits and all the things that that brings to our lives. Just please speak to us again as we consider these words from Your Word. It's in the name of the Lord Jesus Christ that I pray. Amen. I don't think I have to tell you, but it's just fairly obvious, but just sin separates, and that's what it does all the time. It sin separates. It creates a distance between us and people. It creates a distance between us and God. It always separates. And if you remember last week, if you were here, we talked about Genesis 3 and Genesis 1 through 3, and how Adam and Eve were in Eden. And it was so perfect, and it was so wonderful. Until the moment they disobeyed the one command that God gave, don't eat from the tree. And they were both deceived, we could say. They both ate from the tree. And at that moment, everything changed for them. At that moment, now they were no longer permitted to be in the garden. And they were separated from that. That they were separated from that relationship that they had with God. They were separated from one another in the sense that they were blaming each other for what had happened. And I think the commentator says it well, and he says, after Genesis 3, very early in the Bible, after Genesis 3, Adam and Eve's easy access to the presence of God was denied. Sin had entered the picture, and God hates sin. And that's what I'm saying, sin separates. So once sin came into the picture, they were now separated from God. There was a distance there. And it had to be resolved. How are you going to bridge the gap now? There's a gap. And God's on one side of the gap, and you or Adam and Eve or everyone else in the world are on the other side of the gap. And you have to bridge the gap somehow. But now they no longer were able to walk freely with God in the garden. They were no longer able to know that relationship that they enjoyed before. But nevertheless, God in His grace did provide a way for His people to come to worship and commune with Him. And it's not even expressly stated. But what we see this in Genesis 4, Cain and Abel, the children of Adam and Eve, they brought sacrifices to the Lord. Adam was pleased with Abel's sacrifice. Adam was not pleased with Cain's sacrifice. But the implication is, they brought their sacrifices to an altar. And why the need for the sacrifice? You know, what's the deal? I mean, why even do that? Why even bring a sacrifice to God? Oh, in one sense, we could say that the sacrifice is as a means of worship. We come and we offer ourselves to God. We put ourselves in the offering plate. We say, My life is yours. I'm going to worship you. And that's my sacrifice of praise, you might say. Another way to look at it would be, I've sinned against God. So I bring an offering to essentially pay for the sin that I've committed. And that's more the idea here. It may be both, granted, but I think really the offering was both. It was for the sin, and it was for a purpose of worship. So they're coming near to God at the altar. And that's where they find God in. Because after Eden, God was a little harder to find. He wasn't walking in the garden. If he was, they weren't in the garden anymore. So there was a separation that had taken place because of their sin. And the commentator says this about an altar. The name given to the place of worship between the fall of Adam and Eve and between the Exodus is the altar. It's where we find the people of God meeting with God. And we see this in Genesis chapter 8, verse 15. I'll read for you the account of Noah. This is like right after the waters had receded from the earth. Then God said to Noah, "Come out of the earth. You and your wife and your sons and their wives, bring every animal, every living creature that is with you, the birds, the animals, all the creatures that move along the ground, so they can multiply on the earth and be fruitful and increase in number upon it." So Noah came out together with his sons and his wives, and his wife and his sons' wives, and all the animals and the creatures that move along the ground, everything that moves on the earth, come out of the ark, one kind after another. Then Noah built an altar to the Lord, taking some of the clean animals and clean birds. He sacrificed burnt offerings on it. The Lord smelled the pleasing aroma in his heart and said, "Never again will I curse the ground because of man, even though every indication of his heart is evil from childhood. Never again will I destroy all the living creatures as I have done." So we see the connection again with Noah, that as soon as he gets off the ark, I think really it's an act of worship, and it's really probably a sacrifice for his sin and for the sin of his family that they may have committed upon the ark. You know, it's, here's my worship, here's my sacrifice to you. I'm building this altar. And we see that he finds God at the altar. And it's interesting to me because, you know, it's like, you try to make sense of this, like, when we humbly come before God, though, with our sin, when we acknowledge, like, I'm sinful, when we acknowledge to God, "You are great, and I'm going to worship you." See, that's a humble position. We come in a humble way. We say, "God is great, and I'm not nearly as great as Him." We say, you know, "I have sinned, and you're holy. You have no evil, no sin in you at all. You're perfectly holy, set apart from me." So it's this humble position. You're coming before the altar. You're putting your sacrifice on the altar. And then God shows up. I think because He sees the heart of the person, right? I think because He notices the sacrifice. But it continues on. If you read through Genesis, it continues on. Abraham, this is in chapter 12. Abraham leaves his household as the Lord had told him. And Lot went with him. Abraham was 75 years old when he set out from Haran. He took his wife Sarai and his nephew Lot, all the possessions they had accumulated, and and set out for the land of Canaan. And they arrived there. Abraham traveled through the land as far as the site of the tree of Moreh at Shechem. At that time, the Canaanites were in the land. The Lord appeared to Abram and said, "To your offspring, I will give this land." So he built an altar there to the Lord who appeared to him. From there, he went on toward the hills of Bethel and pitched his tent. With Bethel on the west and Ai on the east. There he built an altar to the Lord and called on the name of the Lord. Then Abraham set out and continued toward Negev. It's the same principle, you know. The Lord tells Abraham to go. And he goes. He leaves his father's house behind, not knowing where exactly he's going at the moment. But God makes these promises to Abraham. You know, through your seed, all the nations of the earth are going to be blessed. In this land, I'm going to give this land to your descendants. They're going to rule and reign here. They're going to multiply here. They're going to live in this place. And Abraham just believes it because God said it. He believed it. And God appears to Abraham at the altars that he built. And God shows up. Again, I think because of the faith, because of the heart of who Abraham is, God shows up. What do we know about altars? Well, we know this from Exodus chapter 22. This is also in your outline. The Lord said to Moses, "Tell the Israelites this. You have seen for yourselves that I have spoken to you from heaven. Do not make any gods to be alongside me. Do not make for yourselves gods of silver or gods of gold." Which is, by the way, what the surrounding nations were doing all the time and every time. They made all different gods out of precious metals in the shape of all different kinds of creatures. He said this simply to them in verse 24 of Exodus chapter 20. "Make an altar of earth for me, and sacrifice your burnt offerings and your fellowship offerings, your sheep and goats and your cattle. Wherever I cause my name to be honored, I will come to you and bless you. If you make an altar of stones for me, do not build it with dressed stones, for you will defile it if you use a tool on it. And do not go up on my altar on steps, lest your nakedness be exposed on it." So here, God just sets out simple regulations, and these are like the opposite of all the regulations that the other nations had about altars. You know, they would go up on steps. They would participate in shameful things. They would make gods of gold and silver. But God simply says, if you make a simple altar to me and you follow what I'm saying to you this day, you know, here, I'm going to show up at the altar. That's what he says. "Wherever I cause my name to be honored, I will come to you and I will bless you." That's the promise from God. You know, if I showed up here, or if I told you to go here, and you said, you know, God told me to go here, so I built the altar, as Abraham did. God did exactly this. He showed up. And he blessed Abraham. Not only for the sake of Abraham, but so that Abraham could go now and be a blessing to other people as well. So it was not a fancy thing that they were going to build this altar. It was just a simple altar. The point wasn't how good the altar looked. The point was really the heart of the worshiper that was coming. And God shows up. So, if you remember what we've been saying, that sin has separated us from each other all the time. This happens. Someone sins against us. And now there's a huge separation between us and that person. Because we think, how could that person could have done this thing to me that was wrong? Or we often sin against somebody else. So now there's a separation. And they say, how could Robbie have done this to me? How could he have treated me this way? How could he have said that? Now, there's a lengthy passage in the back of your outline. I don't know if I'm going to read all of it. There was this region that Abraham was told to go. The region of Moriah. Mount Moriah. And the interesting thing to me is when the commentaries look at the maps and they try and figure out, okay, where was this in relation to everything else? A lot of them actually believe that Mount Moriah was the same spot, or in that region, there was a spot there that Christ was actually crucified. They believe that it was the same location. And I can't prove it to you. All I can say is a lot of them believe that about Mount Moriah and that region. But Abraham, you remember, it's a very well-known story. He's told to take his only son Isaac and go up and sacrifice Isaac on the mountain. So early in the morning, Abraham goes with Isaac and his servants. He leaves the servants behind and he goes with his son. And it's interesting, verse 4 says, on the third day, Abraham looked up and saw the place in the distance. In verse 7, Isaac spoke up and said, Father, the fire and the wood are here, but where is the lamb for the burnt offering? Right, his son knows how this works. We're going to have a burnt offering. We got all the stuff. We just don't have the lamb. You know, we kind of forgot one of the steps here. This kid has been well trained, right? He knows how this works. He's seen his father set up an altar before. There was a lamb. There was an animal that had to die for the burnt offering to take place. He can't really make sense. He scratched his head. Where's the lamb at? Abraham answers, God himself will provide a lamb for the burnt offering of my son. And the two of them went on together. When they reached the place God had told them about, Abraham built an altar there. He arranged the wood on it. He bound his son Isaac and laid him on the altar, on top of the wood. He took out the knife to slay his son. But the angel of the Lord called out, Abraham, Abraham. Here I am, he replied. Do not lay a hand on the boy. Do not do anything to him. Now I know that you fear God, because you have not withheld from me your son, your only son. Abraham looked up, and there in the thicket he saw a ram caught by the horns. He went over and he took the ram and sacrificed it as a burnt offering instead of his son. So Abraham called that place, the Lord will provide. And to this day, it is said, on the mountain of the Lord, it will be provided. Angel of the Lord called to Abraham from heaven a second time and said, I swear by myself, declares the Lord, that because you have done this, you have not withheld from me your son, your only son. I will surely bless you and make your descendants as numerous as the stars in the sky and the sand on the seashore, and your descendants will take possession of the cities of their enemies. And through your offspring, all nations of the earth will be blessed, because you have obeyed me." Abraham returned to his servants, and they set off together for Beersheba. Abraham stayed in Beersheba. I found it interesting that Abraham, before this event, before he even knew what God was going to do, he said, "God's going to provide a land." I don't know how, but he's going to provide. And it was a prophecy, because that's exactly what the Lord did. Because I really don't think Abraham knew how the Lord was going to provide. Maybe he thought, after I kill the boy, the Lord will provide and raising him up. And that's what Hebrews would say. Abraham believed that God could raise the dead. But he just knew the Lord's going to provide. And he saw it. His faith saw it before his eyes saw it. And we think about this separation. We think about the gap that's created because of our own sin. Between us and each other, between us and God. And all I think we can walk away with is the Lord already provided for the gap. Because if it's true, like, even if it's not true, that Jesus died around this region of Moriah, which I think he did, then on the mountain of the Lord, it will be provided. That the sacrifice that I need, that you need, for your sin, will be provided on the mountain of the Lord. And it was provided. So the good news for us, though, is that we don't have to build an altar and sacrifice animals. I'm really glad. Right? There's a lot of blood involved with that. You know, a lot of people wouldn't be okay with that, right? Especially in today's society. This would not be a good thing. This would not be socially acceptable at all in today's world. I mean, we don't have to build this altar. We don't have to get God to show up. We don't have to deal with the altar. The reason is because God has already provided. On the mountain of the Lord, it was provided. He provided His Son, His only Son. And He said, "You know, I understand you got this gap. There's a gap between me and you. It's a separation that our sin causes. There's no way to bridge the gap. You can be really smart. You can be well educated. You can have it all together. But you can't bridge the gap." The Lord has to provide the bridge. So He sends His Son. And said, "My Son's going to pay for your sin. My Son is going to bridge the gap that exists." And you don't have to build the altar for me to show up. Really, because of Christ, you call out His name. You say, "Father." He shows up, right? You call on His name because of Christ, and that sacrifice, there's no gap anymore. The gap has been bridged. And we don't see God maybe show up the way we want Him to show up. You know, in a fiery display. Or with lightning and smoke and power. But He shows up. And there's no mistake, really, when He does show up. You know it in your heart. You feel it in your spirit. Well, He's there with you. He's helping you. You may not know the end. You may not know how all this is going to work out. But He's working it out on your behalf. And it takes faith to say, "I don't know what's going to happen here, but I'm believing you're going to show up. I'm believing you're going to be fighting and working for me. I'm believing that you're going to hear my prayer. I'm believing that my sins are erased or forgiven. Yes, I still struggle with sin, but you forgive my sin completely. You give me that access I need to the Father. Because I can't build an altar anymore. This Jesus was already on the altar. It was a cross. That's what it looked like. That's what it took for him to pay for those sins. So these folks in the Old Testament, they knew. They built the altar, God showed up. But we know God is here. God is with me. He's with you. Because of His Spirit. Because the gap has been bridged. And it's been fully paid. So we can just be thankful that though our sin separates, Jesus Christ reunites us with the Father who we're separated from. He can reunite us with each other. As we have forgiven, as we have sinned against one another, we can say, can you forgive me? Because I don't always get it right. And we forgive each other as Christ has forgiven us. And we rejoice, no more altar. That was once for all, Jesus on the cross.